Christine Williams. Christine will be talking about beginning obesity prevention before birth in a U.S.-Mexico border community. Christine is a program coordinator at UC San Diego in the Department of Pediatrics, Division of Child Development and Community Health. She has an MPH in Health Promotion and Behavioral Sciences from San Diego State University. Her research interests include early life obesity prevention and maternal and child health promotion. Over the past 2 years, she has managed this pilot intervention to promote optimal weight in first-time mothers and their babies living near the U.S.-Mexico border.
Great. Thank you very much. Good morning. I'm excited to be here on behalf of my co-investigators, Juanita Garcia and Dr. Sheila Gahagan, who's the principal investigator of this project. Go ahead, raise your hand. to present to you some results from a pilot intervention that we did to promote optimal weight in first-time pregnant moms and their babies. This project was a collaboration between the University of California, San Diego, and a federally qualified health center serving a largely U.S.-Mexico border population. I have no relationships to disclose. I'd like to start by telling you the story of Sylvia. She's a 21-year-old first-time pregnant mom, and she lives near the U.S.-Mexico border in San Diego. She was born and educated in the U.S., but she spends a lot of her time traveling to Tijuana to see her family and her friends, and she runs errands and goes to dinner and does things on the other side of the border all the time. This is her husband. He's been especially involved with this pregnancy, and he has some strong opinions about certain things, especially related to breastfeeding. They live with her mom, who does the grocery shopping and the cooking in the house, and she likes to remind Sylvia about what she should and shouldn't do during pregnancy as well. This is her sister, who has two children of her own, and her sister likes to share about her experiences during her pregnancy. And we can't forget about her grandmother. She lives in rural Mexico, and she likes to share her experiences with Sylvia about what she did during her pregnancy almost 50 years ago. And certainly we can't forget about her mother-in-law, who has a tendency to also share unsolicited advice about pregnancy. Now, Sylvia has seen her physician in Tijuana a few times during this pregnancy, as well as her physician on the U.S. side of the border in San Diego at a community health center. And like most moms her age, she gets a lot of her information from the internet. She seeks it out independently, and she talks to her friends on social media sites such as Facebook. So I share the story of Sylvia with you because I want you to keep her in mind as I tell you about our project. She gets a lot of information coming at her, and some of it's helpful, and some of it's confusing, and a lot of it's conflicting, as you might imagine. So she kind of embodies a typical participant in our group. Excess weight gain during pregnancy is associated with short and long-term risks and effects for mom and baby. The Institute of Medicine has recommendations for weight gain during pregnancy. So if you're a mom who's starting pregnancy at normal BMI, you should gain approximately 25 to 35 pounds. If you're a mom who's starting pregnancy in the overweight category, you should gain 15 to 25. And if you're starting in the obese category, just 11 to 20 pounds. But it's estimated that in almost two-thirds of U.S. pregnancies, weight gain is in excess of those recommendations. And the risk for moms who don't lose the weight in the postpartum period increases the subsequent risk for additional pregnancies that they go on to have. And with regards to baby, for moms who gain too much weight, they are at risk for being born low or high birth weight, and also subsequent risk for childhood obesity, including the importance of their growth in the first year of life. The research actually shows that it's both important how much you weigh coming into pregnancy and how much you gain. So they're both important. And so because of all these reasons, we need strategies to promote optimal weight in mothers and their babies during pregnancy and the first year of life. The goal of our study was to test the feasibility of an intervention to promote optimal weight in first-time mothers and their babies. So we implemented a healthy lifestyle curriculum that was based on the Diabetes Prevention Program, which is an evidence-based program, and we adapted it for pregnancy. And the groups, we held weekly group sessions that were led by a promotora or a lay health educator who is from the target community. this was a pilot study, so we were doing the study to find out if we could make it work. And it ran from July 2012 to July 2013. And women entered the study around or before 20 weeks of pregnancy. And they were eligible to participate if it was their first pregnancy, they were at least 18, and they were a patient of the community health center that we worked with. It's worth mentioning that this study was funded by two small funding mechanisms. And so we kind of ran it in two phases, a prenatal phase and a postnatal phase. And we built in a small break between prenatal and postnatal for moms to have time to deliver and get settled with their babies before they started coming back to group sessions. In our prenatal groups, women came to group every week, and they alternated. So 1 week they came and we did the nutrition breastfeeding curriculum, and then the opposite week they flip-flopped and went to physical activity. So they did that for the course of most of the second half of their pregnancy. And they maintained regular contact with their promotora. She would call them to remind them about class and just to check in to see how they were doing. We continued in a similar vein in the postnatal group. Women came weekly, again maintaining contact with the promotora. Starting about 3 months postpartum, the women came back. That was about the right time for them to be able to be organized to come back to a group session. And in addition, they had access to a peer counselor for breastfeeding support. So she was a young mom from the community who was about their age, and she had breastfed her own daughter for 18 months. So she could provide them really basic ideas about breastfeeding and mainly be a cheerleader for breastfeeding for them. And she started with them very late in the prenatal phase, so then they were able to access her throughout the delivery period and then after. And we explored the use of Facebook versus a text messaging system. And actually, because of the limitations of a lot of the cross-border cell phones, the moms that had phones that they could use on both sides were unable to receive short code text messages, which is how the big automated systems work. And for that reason, we decided to go with the private Facebook group. It was more accessible for everybody. So that was something unique to our setting that we had to consider. So looking at it kind of all together, this package intervention, between the group sessions, the study staff model that we decided to use, our social media, our physical activity, we were able to offer women multiple access points for female social support, for problem solving, reinforcement of our class messages, and a little bit of self-monitoring. The study took place at a federally qualified health center, but specifically at a maternal child health center. So this is designed to be a one-stop shop for families. They have OB, pediatric care, dental, social workers, they have a WIC clinic. And so families come here for a variety of reasons. So this was the ideal place to have this study because women were coming here anyway for all these other reasons. And as you can see, they have this beautiful teaching kitchen where they do health education classes, and so we were able to hold our groups there. We took measurements with the moms at three time points in the prenatal and the postnatal phase, height and weight. And then with babies, we also asked moms about their pre-pregnancy weight, and if they weren't sure, we pulled it from their medical record. And then babies, we did three times in the postpartum period as well, and we also had their birth weight and birth length data. And then a lot of our data was feasibility data, so how many times are women coming to class, and how many contacts did we have with them. And then we did some surveys about knowledge and beliefs, internet usage, and a little bit about breastfeeding. So what did we find? Well, I first want to talk about recruitment and retention, because this was our biggest issue in this study, as you might imagine. So originally we recruited 40 women, and we enrolled 23 in the prenatal group. By the end of the prenatal group, we had 12 active participants. And then in the postnatal group, we re-enrolled 8 of those 12 who stayed with us until the end. So I want to talk about how this is such a complex setting for recruitment and retention. San Diego in the U.S. meets Tijuana in Mexico at the busiest border crossing in the world. So as you might imagine, people live a very cross-border life. There's a lot of mobility. People live and work on both sides of the border. And it's a very bicultural community. And so it presents transportation issues, international issues, all kinds of things related to this recruitment and retention that make it very complicated to keep women coming to group sessions. So just keep that in mind that it is a unique setting. A little bit about our sample. Most of majority overweight and obese, most of them in their early 20s, about 75% born in the U.S., and most of them preferred Spanish, although I will say a majority of them were bilingual, although Spanish was their language of choice. And about two-thirds living married or living as married, and most of them at least had a high school education. Okay, so a little bit about weight data. Of our prenatal group, so of our 12, we had just over half met the weight recommendations and just under half did not meet the weight recommendations. And when you look at the breakdown by BMI category, you see that our normal and overweight did slightly better than our obese group, but it's hard to extrapolate too much from this data because our numbers are extremely small. So just to show you kind of what our women ended up doing. In the postnatal group, we had almost two-thirds of our moms below or within 5 pounds of their pre-pregnancy weight by 5 months postpartum. And of the participants who were overweight or obese, 80% of them, 4 out of 5, were back to within 5 pounds or below their pre-pregnancy weight. Babies were actually all born in the normal. Most of them were somewhere between 6 and 8 pounds birth weight. And in the first 5 months of life, none of them were at or above the 90th percentile for weight. That's about all I can say about our baby data. And with regards to breastfeeding, we had high intention to breastfeed. A lot of moms in the prenatal phase were really excited about it. We had about 5 of our moms who were providing breast milk for their babies in the postpartum period by 3 months, and then that decreased by 5 months. But anecdotally, I would say that the moms who utilized the breastfeeding peer counselor and or had a supportive female at home, such as their mom, had better breastfeeding outcomes than the other moms. Okay, so some of our successes. The schedule and the location were ideal. In fact, in the beginning, they said you won't get people to come every week, it's too often. And when we asked the participants, let's decrease it to biweekly, they said, no, we want to come every week. So it actually turned out to work out really well. And as I mentioned, the setting was great because what it did was it helped improve attendance at our groups. If a mom came and said, I just had an OB appointment and then I came to group, or I just had a WIC appointment or I have one right after this, it was really great to be able to coordinate those appointments and have them come to both at once. It improved attendance at our groups as well as clinic appointments, which is mutually beneficial. The Promotora and Breastfeeding Peer Counselor models were extremely well received, and the group, the setting of the group with the female social support, also women, 100% of our participants said they would recommend the program to a friend. And I think it's worth mentioning that we actually had 2 different promotoras, just for logistical reasons, not for anything else, but the one was an older mom who had children herself and was different age demographic than our participants, and the other one was a young woman of their age but wasn't a mom herself. And surprisingly, they were both very well received. They loved both of the promotoras. So interesting to know that they can be of different demographics and still be successful. And lastly, I will say that Facebook was a huge success in this group. It absolutely transformed our ability to reach and be reached by our participants in such a complex setting. So it was a private group page, so only our participants could access it, and even their Facebook friends didn't know that they knew they were in this group, but they didn't know it had anything to do with pregnancy, so as much as we could on Facebook, we protected their privacy. Okay, I want to revisit retention just a little bit, because you see that in the prenatal group, we retained just over 50%. And we didn't implement the Facebook page, because we didn't think of it, until later in the program, at the very, very end of the prenatal phase, just before women delivered. So a few participants decided not to return for a number of reasons, and then in the postnatal group, we were able to retain all 8 of our women. So we're asking ourselves kind of why that might be. And you might say possibly these 8 were the women who were the most motivated of the group anyway, and they had the least barriers to transportation. But we like to think it's all thanks to Mark Zuckerberg. But all joking aside, let me show you a little bit about what we were able to do. And I realize probably everybody in this room is Facebook savvy, so just bear with me. But what we could do is we could see that who had seen our post. So even if we couldn't call them on the phone or we couldn't leave a message or anything, we knew at least they had seen it on Facebook, a reminder about coming to class. And we could see what kind of interaction they were having with each other and also whether they were confirming whether they could come or not to class. So that was really interesting. And then, you know, we could see what they were doing in terms of liking each other's posts. Okay, this is the same thread. So you see we had a reminder. We could see who saw it, and a number of moms commented, and some of them liked each other's posts. But what I want to do is draw your attention to this portion of the conversation, because it's very interesting. We have two participants, Liliana and Maria, and they initiate this conversation between each other. So Liliana says, "I'm sorry I'm not going to be able to come. I have a doctor's appointment." To which Maria responds, "So when are we going to meet up?" And Liliana says, "Well, this coming Tuesday, which is the day we had our classes, are you going to go? I'm going to be there." And Maria says, "Okay, I'll see you there." So this kind of really rich participant interaction was something we didn't predict, and certainly something that we couldn't have done with the text, the one-way back-and-forth text messaging with the promotora. And it's like this built-in female social support that became this outside network outside of our groups that kept our women connected. So really, just an example, but really amazing some of the things that came out of this Facebook page. We keep wishing that we had thought of it right at the beginning of the study. Okay, so some of the things we learned that were really important. Physical activity was really tricky with this group. There are a lot of beliefs about safety of physical activity that are cultural, generational, for whatever reason. And overall, the women coming into our study were fairly sedentary samples. So for the next iteration, what we need to do is offer sort of the cafeteria options for physical activity. For moms who want to do Zumba or something more active, they have that option. For moms who are just ready to do a walking group, they have it. And for moms who might just want to do some light yoga, they have that. So we need to offer them something for where they're at. Weekly weights, more successful for self-monitoring, than trying to keep track of your calorie intake and your servings. It's actually really hard to do that if anybody's ever tried. And so in this population, just simply having them come in and know their weight every week is a better self-monitoring tool for knowing kind of what their progress is. And they could say, what did I do this week that was different, that I might have gained too much or that I might be doing well? Transportation continues to be an incredibly complex issue. San Diego doesn't have a great public transportation system. And again, with this border issue, we had moms coming to our group, crossing the border to come to our group, and you can wait for hours sometimes at the border to cross, even if you're crossing on foot. And when you're really pregnant or you have a young baby, you're probably going to say that's too much effort. So we have to think outside the box and think with our collaborators there about what we can do to help moms with transportation. The involvement of the physicians at the clinic is really important, especially so that they can support the weight messages that we're sending. So we're telling them in class, but they're not hearing anything when they go see their doctor, or we're telling them in class and they're hearing it from their doctor, then it becomes a much stronger message. And lastly, from a systems level, it's really important to be able to coordinate their appointments. Because like I said, this improved attendance at our group and at their clinic visits, which the clinic also really appreciated. So to put a flag in their chart that says, this woman's in this program, schedule her appointments on Tuesday when she comes to this other group. Something as simple as that could really improve our attendance. From here, what we'd like to do is test the same intervention, but largely delivered through Facebook. So to see if we could get women to just come to maybe a couple group sessions in the prenatal and a couple in the postnatal, and then send the messages out over Facebook and kind of let them support each other, let our promotora be involved, but see about the effectiveness of that. Because if it seems like it could work, at least to some degree, it's largely disseminable and extremely affordable in terms of an intervention related to pregnancy. So that's the next thing we'd like to do. And we also have applied for funding to do a randomized control trial of this study so that we could get an adequate sample size to be able to test group differences, and also to maybe be able to tease out which components of the intervention were most effective, or maybe they're all needed. Maybe the package is really everything is needed. I'd like to acknowledge our OBGYN investigator, Dr. Yvette LaCourcier, our amazingly hardworking partners at the Community Health Center, and our study staff who were incredibly dedicated to this project, and of course, our most amazing mother and baby participants. Thank you.